we've always believed that once audiences get that feeling of being able to interact with content, the demand for that content will increase dramatically.
This is The Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to The Safari. This is Morty Singer speaking. Today, we are going to discuss the importance of live commerce, otherwise known as streaming commerce. It is a very powerful and growing part of the market today. And Dave Lazar is the founder and CEO of Stage 10, which is one of the leading and emerging powerhouses in the space. And they are the ones that are able to deliver to brands, as well as to many different kinds of retailers and even platforms, the ability to stream and shop and sell at the same time and create interactivity between the seller and the buyers. Think QVC and HSN on steroids and absolutely distributed across the consumer landscape. It's a vital part of the growth over the next 10 years. In Asia, it's already a $300 billion piece of e-commerce and digital commerce. In America, it is a fraction of that today. So stick around. Dave, thank you so much for joining me on The Safari today.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Morty. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Where does this podcast find you?
I'm in Toronto on a beautiful October's day.
Good for you. Well, we are going to dive right in because as those who know me will remember, I am obsessed with video. I'm obsessed with brands being their own influencers and really turning the camera on themselves versus on other people to speak for them. And I find that what Stage 10 has done, indeed, you know, people have probably started to hear about your company, but you've been around as Stage 10 for quite a while. And I think that it'll be wonderful to get into that. But in summary, I think it is what I hope everyone will get out of this is an understanding of where the future is. On this podcast, I think I've said it 100 times, and I'll say it again, the future is already here. It's just unevenly distributed. And I think the best place to start will be sort of the context of what you're calling now live shopping. What's excited you about live shopping and the history of it? You know, maybe touch on Asia, the fact that in Asia, live shopping is, I think, yeah, you know, by some reports, a $300 billion part of the consumer industry over there, and it's obviously inspired you know, a decade ago plus to bring those concepts here. And I do think we are at the foothills of an exponential, massive rise in the penetration of live shopping in the United States, indeed in the West. So, give us the history of your passion with live shopping. Your history, I think, obviously in the United States doing that with some of the big guys who do that here, the forefathers of what you are doing, and then we'll dive in from there. That's many questions, but of course I'll try and make them more succinct going forward.
No, that's excellent. I mean, it's very exciting, and I guess I'll start with kind of where we've always come from, which is from a place of the web being underutilized as a medium for that is two-way and it is interactive. And all of the opportunities that arise from that, live shopping is one of the most exciting because A, it gives an opportunity to build businesses with live video. B, it kind of, for the first time in decades, takes e-commerce beyond the brochure creates that connection between the merchant and their consumer, and then provides some real delight in terms of being in that conversation, being in that interactive two-way experience. So looking at how the history has evolved, we've seen in the East, in China, and in other markets, a massive explosion, as you were saying, in live shopping. 20% of all e-commerce is already on live video in those markets. And that's because they're seeing tremendous success with moving product and with creating a form of delight, which was previously impossible on a website, in terms of a real-time conversation between a merchant or a live seller and an audience member.
So just to clarify that, because for those listening who don't understand that, this is not just a parroting of selling, which is what Americans may be used to. Obviously, you grew up in and around QVC, HSN, all of those home shopping channels and that and the like, which historically has been that. It's just been people selling, trying to get the highest dollars of sales per minute. And it's very one-way oriented. What you're doing here is talking about a two-way conversation live. You're selling and the people on screen selling can actually react to the comments and the questions in the chat and maybe even bring people into the conversation live. Hey, beaming in from wherever is Dave, and he wants to talk about how can I use this product for X, Y, and Z. So is that right?
That's right. It turns the shopping experience online from a monologue to a dialogue, and not just online. Like the major advantage of the internet versus, let's say, television home shopping is that two-way medium. And the live seller isn't required to carry a monologue at the audience explaining things to be successful. In fact, the way they're the most successful is if it's a natural conversation between the streamer and the audience that is in real time, like you're in the same room. So in a way, it creates some of the feelings you'd get when you'd go to a store and you'd ask a question of the salesperson or the representative. But it goes a step further, because this one-to-many medium means it's not just a sales representative you're speaking to. Oftentimes, you're speaking to the founder of the brand or a brand ambassador. And what we found is, you know, this, a lot of the consumers have the exact same questions as each other. So if someone asks a question and then the merchant answers them in real time, calls them by name, says, "Hey, thanks for your question, Morty. That's great. You know, this product does X, Y, and Z, and that's why we think it's going to be right for you." That answers the questions of thousands of people watching, and then the purchases start coming in. There's another layer to it as well, that delight, that in terms of where Stage 10's always come from this, we've always believed that once audiences get that feeling of being able to interact with content, the demand for that content will increase dramatically. So what I mean by that is, it's not just a TV experience that you like. It becomes a social experience and gives you that same kind of boost of hormone that you would get in an interaction on a social network. But now you're doing it between a merchant and a consumer, with a way for a consumer, an audience member, to express their love for the merchant, for the brand, with their wallet. So another interesting point is, we've definitely seen that people aren't just buying to have the item to deliver to them. They're buying to have that feeling of being a part of the show. And that opens up all kinds of really interesting possibilities for merchants to create content around the category of their merchandise, but not specifically about the merchandise necessarily. Mm-hmm. So let's say a brand that does outdoor clothing could create the next outdoor specialty network. And it goes from there. And those that content can be monetized through the sale of products and really creates a more compelling reason for audiences to tune in for a shoppable experience like this.
Yeah, and indeed, going to your outdoor example, the store locations, and if you think of those big, you know, Cabela's and, you know, those massive outdoor type of retailers, they have these incredible stores that are, the visual merchandising is off the charts, and they're in these really interesting locations sometimes. And, you know, one could have live from the Denver store or live from the Aspen store or live from the San Francisco store, and actually empower the salespeople to become the faces of the broadcast. And you are able to also bring customers in for the broadcast and create an event and community activation. So it's not just about, I think, it's really an omni-channel video experience, because you can use the real estate as not only a billboard, but that as a stage. And again, you know, your company has that word in its founding name and stage 10. And I think the staging of a platform, of a brand, of a retail company, indeed, an influencer, right? They can leverage their infrastructure to be able to broadcast. And I, you know, it's so funny talking about it in the abstract, seemingly, because this is happening every day in China and in Korea and Japan. But obviously our friends here in America are so not used to it. And I think, again, you and I, you grew up deeply in it. I grew up in it circuitously with Marvin Traub, and who had a passion for this, as you know, and had his own little hand in that whole world, as you know. But I think that it's just a whole new way of livening retail, and we've been looking for something to enliven retail for maybe two decades. Like, what is the next thing, right? Everyone said it was going to be e-commerce. It's probably this, right?
Mm-hmm. And this is very related to e-commerce, and going back to some of the history in the Asian market, specifically China, this has been going on for years there, and they've already generated a lot of learnings, which I think can be really useful as we go to scale with live shopping in North America. First, their first instinct was to put influencers on it in to be able to draw in an audience and sell products. But what they quickly realized was that it was not the influencers who are the most popular. It was the most popular live sellers. It was actually the folks that had learned the techniques of live selling. Be conversational with the audience, answer their questions right away, thank them by name right on screen. Those were the people that became the next generation of influencers in that market. So it was a really interesting learning. I think something that's very valuable and speaks to your point about a sales representative being able to do this. If they've got a charming way about them, if they're quick on their feet and can be in a conversation with a customer, just like they would if they were representing the brand in a brick and mortar store, you know, they can be turned into influencers and specifically live shopping influencers, because it does have some different skill sets to it. So to be fast on your feet, be conversational. Don't be a presenter. Be a collaborator, a conversationalist. So I think that's a really interesting fact about how this grew in those markets. And I think a great learning point for how it moves forward in the West.
So you're touching on something that's interesting. I think if I were to summarize what you just said, it's about authenticity and about being real and natural and not produced, right?
Yes.
I often refer to the Gary Vaynerchuk term of being, you need to capture, not produce. Right, if you're capturing, you're just gonna be more natural, and you're gonna then cut it up later on, and maybe you can sell against it, or preach against it, or do whatever, brand build against it. But if you are producing, suddenly you put this wall up between you and your customer, and they can see through it. The wall is now completely transparent. Everyone's so overly produced, or has seen everything.
I think that's a great way to put it. Real-time. Interactive streaming monetized by transactions does, and that's, you know, what Stage 10 does just that, it breaks down that fourth wall. It lets people talk back with the presenters who they would normally on TV, you know, maybe they'd want to yell back at the TV sometimes. Now, when they want to express themselves, the presenter sees that right away and responds right away, and it gives them that feeling and connects them to the brand in an unprecedented way, and makes them want to express love for the brand and be acknowledged by the brand. So it's really interesting, because I think, to me, it'll be there's going to be a subtle change in terms of how this kind of content is monetized. Whereas in the past, it was really these brands who were driving content anyway through their advertising. Now it goes one step further, and it's still going to be the brands who are paying for the next generation of content formats, but it's going to be through direct sales of the product to the audience, which is a much nicer experience for the audience. Think about that thing where, instead of paying for your content by being force-fed an annoying interruptive ad, which is really, unless you're in a live sporting event where there's natural pauses for them, really disruptive. Now you're getting something. You're buying something during the show. In a way, you're supporting the content, but you're also getting something back. And it's not just the product, as I said, it's that connection, that feeling. When the presenter thanks you by name and says, "Hey, Morty, thanks for buying that hat. It's going to look fantastic on you." Then everybody else say, "Hey, I want to buy from a person again, not just from a picture and a button on a website."
Yeah. So once again, tying back to this notion of omnichannel, everyone thinks it's going to be a video or a digital experience, but it actually catalyzes physical community activation, which I think is the thing that's been lost, quite frankly.
Right. And I think when we built Stage 10, we definitely built it with that in mind, that if people had to be in a big studio to produce this content, and let's say it was a fashion brand, they wanted to interview a designer or talk to the audience, you can't fly all these people in and put on these big productions and still expect live shopping to be a profitable content endeavor. So our platform allows you to produce it from anywhere, produce it from home, bring in guests from anywhere, from their phones, from their webcams. There's no need to have, you know, crews sent out to set up this lighting. It goes back to what you were saying about the authenticity versus the glossiness. That is so true, and we've seen that in the market over and over again.
Yeah.
I thought I would add some bits about the history, which I think are relevant in terms of how North America has made their first sort of forays into live shopping. And generally, the first instinct in North America was to do live shopping on social networks. And the instinct there was, hey, my audience, I already have gathered an audience of followers on the social networks, or that's where people come to find out information about our broadcast. And you know, doing live shopping streams on social networks is still useful, because it's marketing for your product, marketing for your brand. It's a way to let an existing following know the message you're trying to get out. But it's super limiting in a few ways. And what we've really discovered is that what's happening with live shopping on social, or what they call social commerce, is not really a live shopping experience. It's more of a marketing vehicle for a storefront or a product. And that's because those social networks, which have been around for a while and were never purpose-built for this, they deliver the content with a long delay, because their video systems were chiefly designed in most cases for video on demand, and in the cases of some of the live platforms, they were optimized for game streaming versus real-time interactive streaming. So that long delay, combined with the fact that to make a purchase, the audience literally needed to leave the content, go to a storefront or a website. That sounds to me like an advertisement. What goes on in China is a real-time stream where the purchase happens right on screen as an interactive part of the show. And as Stage 10 has been playing in this world, doing you know, now since we've been doing the live shopping thing since 2019, we've seen that firsthand. We see that when our partners go live on social, they get between a 1% and 2% conversion rate. When the content is delivered to the audience in real time and they're able to click right on screen, like we're able to do for them on their storefronts with Stage 10 or on their owned and operated properties, then the conversion rates jump from 10 to 15%.
Yep.
And that's, I think, the proof that's in the pudding there.
And by the way, there's historical precedent to prove that, because if you look at HSN and QVC, and people, you know, one can go and check out these companies and understand their metrics, and they're fully advertised. When I was looking at and working with those companies, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, they were boasting their conversion rates at, you know, 5 and 6% respectively, which was triple the conversion rate of e-commerce back then, which was two-dimensional photography, obviously. And they still boast those kinds of conversions. Why? Because of the active selling nature of the beast. And I think that in the instance of what you're doing, I also believe that when you're actually able to capture a micro but powerful group of people who are your customers, who care about you because they're loyal to your brand, the conversion rates can probably be 20, 30%, let alone 10, 15%, right?
Yeah. And what you find is that's absolutely true, especially with smaller brands. Now that we've made it a lot more, with Stage 10, we've made it possible for brands below the level of the biggest merchants in the world with their own studios to be able to go live and reach an audience. And now that we're seeing that take place, we're seeing amazing stories. Like I'll tell the story of our, probably the first brand that picked this up, started doing it themselves and go live regularly. It's a bamboo sleepwear company, and they do a weekly slumber party. They're called Bamboo. I'll give them a plug because they've been such a great, learning a customer we've learned so much from. They go live at the same time every week. They gather at this loyal group of fans for this slumber party, and people buy each week. So it almost becomes a community. And I think that's another important note, is that not only does the audience get this unprecedented way to connect directly with the brand and the presenter, because it's this real-time conversation, you feel like you're in the same room. But there's also this kind of cool feeling of the interaction that's going on between the other fans of the brand or the other shoppers. It's something that goes beyond. Like if I say that the conversation between the brand and the consumer is in some ways recreating what happens in a brick and mortar store, where this goes beyond is a community starts to develop between the other consumers. And you never used to see that in the malls, like all the shoppers getting together and talking and saying, oh yeah, I tried this with my niece and she loved it. That kind of stuff is amazing as well, because it builds a feeling of togetherness. It builds that, what do they call that? Where everybody moves together. So if someone's like, oh yeah, I bought this for my niece and it was great.
Then momentum.
A whole bunch of other people, momentum, yeah. Or that sort of group follower think that can be really effective in these situations to increase sales.
Yeah. So look, we've done a very good job, I think, of sort of setting the stage of the business that on the industry and the opportunity. Tell us specifically about Stage 10. You know, you've been personally in and around the space forever. Most recently, as you said, in 2019, focusing on live shopping, but you know, Stage 10 has had its other iterations. For 1 minute, you know, I've obviously given a bit of an introduction here, but why don't you, you know, King Kong yourself a little bit and beat your chest and explain how you really do have incredible chops in this space and how what you are standing up is second to none.
Well, thanks, Morty. I mean, I am a vision-based entrepreneur, a mission-based entrepreneur. And my vision and mission have always been to say what can the web do as a live medium that could open up the next generation of content formats and provide that long-awaited interactive delight and maybe most importantly, that way to make sure there's a revenue stream from those formats because they just don't easily fit in the box of how content was produced on traditional television, or how it was delivered on the web, you know, for the first few decades of the web. And that is, I think, what gave us our specific advantage. So long before the technology was possible, we were thinking about this. So we actually got the attention of a organization here in Canada called the Canada Media Fund. This would have been, I think, 2003. And they gave us a grant to study the future of interactive content formats, which was really helpful for me because it allowed me a year to really think about it and dig in and talk to people and experiment. By 2013, it was looking like it was possible to create an interactive show. And we, because this this long-term vision had not left me, we basically took the profits we were making building all those interactive show extensions and massively multiplayer online games, and we built out a first interactive content format we called Yanked. And it was a 24/7 online talent show where people would perform live from their webcams, and the audience had a button. And if more than half the people were hitting the button, the performer would be gonged off and the next one would go live. And people would earn points by people, the audience, sending flowers or throwing tomatoes, et cetera. So that's really what inspired Stage 10. So the first thing we did was said, we need to build a television control room and a web browser where we could bring in feeds from any internet-connected camera anywhere in the world and have a director mix and control them so that these formats could be brand safe. We also knew that we needed to be able to really fulfill the vision for an interactive content platform monetized by transactions. We absolutely needed to be in real time because we were seeing live take off, but it was taking off with game streaming, and it was taking off in a way that had no way to make money attached to it. So it was really being left behind in the creator economy. At that point with Stage 10, we basically said, hey, we need to put aside our first version of that content delivery network and interactive player and really work on revolutionizing how we can deliver content in real time, sub-second latency, so it felt like a conversation, so the interactions made sense, so shopping could become conversational. That wasn't an easy tech lift. So in the meantime, Stage 10 integrated with all of the social platforms as they started to get into live, starting with Twitch, then Facebook Live and YouTube Live as they came online. And we really became the most popular platform to create live multi-source content on those social networks. Or no, I guess before 2019, we started experiments with on-screen transactions with tipping and donation. So that was kind of happening. People were, I think we raised like $15 million through charity through the platform. We were watching what was going on with Twitch alerts as people were tipping on Twitch, and how the more people would tip when a streamer thanked the tipper by name or put their name up on screen. So we were learning, seeing what was happening. But in 2019, we were like, hey, I think live shopping is going to be the way that this all comes together, because the brands have always been the ones to fund and power content one way or another. Yep. And live shopping was already proving itself to be a massive, massive business, as you were pointing out earlier, in China. So in 2019, we partnered with Shopify so you could actually take your catalog with basically by connecting your Stage 10 account and your Shopify account.
And you're still integrated with Shopify today, I believe, right?
That's correct, yeah. And we've actually taken that integration a step further, which we can talk about in a minute. But in this first integration, the idea was we could actually bring the products from your Shopify catalog into a production environment where a director or a live streamer could feature those products in the context of the show, and the audience could purchase those products in real time by clicking right on screen on any storefront or website. And that that was really exciting to see, but there were still a couple of barriers to bring it to scale. So we were able to deliver that content right on any Shopify storefront, on any OTT app, on any owned and operated property of the brand and merchant partners. And but there were still a couple of issues, like how do you provide an audience to brands below the level of the major merchants or the social networks or the major publishers? So we do work with Netflix and Target and YouTube, Google, and we were powering all of their live shopping and learning a ton from it, including the fact that bit I spoke about earlier, like that when you stream to social, it's because it's a non-purpose built experience, it's the lower, like 1-2% conversion rate versus our purpose built content delivery network and interactive player, which gets the 10-15%. But we learned a lot more in those days, which is this become to bring this to scale in the West. We knew we needed to A, make sure that any merchant could benefit from the power of live shopping, whether they had massive marketing budgets or in-house production companies or studios or not. We needed to be able to let them have an audience discover them. And if they go live, be able to have that audience come back all the time. Mm-hmm. And we also knew that we needed to make sure that the traditional content creators, like publishers and influencers and live streamers and even solopreneurs, like think about all the millions of Amway mm-hmm. sellers, they had a way to make money from live streaming. So we knew that there were two main issues we needed to solve. We needed to be able to help smaller merchants gather an audience so that they could do regular live streams and grow that audience. And we see that over and over again. If a merchant goes live at the same time every week, their audience will grow 10% month over month. But we also needed to really bring it to scale to say, hey, it's not just going to be the merchants making content. There's going to be all kinds of storytellers who want to make money from their content and can add, if they could add merchants' products to that content and sell them directly on screen through the Stage 10 purpose-built system, that this market was going to go through the roof.
Yep. So I think you've done a very good job at laying the technical groundwork on what the plumbing is, how complex that plumbing is, and how easy it is for them to deploy a very complicated set of issues, which matrixed you had to figure out over a decade. So here we are today. You've got this platform, which is presumably at the disposal of most, if not all, in some shape or form. I need you to take off your technical hat now, completely take it off, and focus only on your merchant hat. Your commercial CEO, president of a brand, of a retailer hat, and have them dream a little bit. Like we talked at the very beginning of the conversation about the Cabela's type example, right? Can you give us some case studies or even hypothetical case studies of how the different kinds of groups could work? So let's say a retailer, you touched on Target, a brand, could be any kind of brand, I would say maybe some form of influencer, but I'm not as interested in that third bucket because I think it's important, but I think that's more obvious to people. I think for an enterprise solution that is allowing brands to become influencers themselves / retailers to become influencers themselves, I'd love you to give us some sound bites on what you think the CEO of said brand or company should be advising their colleagues to try and unpack this a little bit further.
To me, it's about the most successful brands are ones who develop a conversation and a community and a vibe around their product, their branding, all the most important things about establishing yourself in people's headspace. And any brand that it is not in that conversation is kind of missing out on some of the magic, not just the magic that is created to improve brand loyalty, to improve brand awareness, but the magic of the old Grand Bazaar, let's say, where you'd go in and you'd be able to meet people from all over to express what's important about your product and where it was from. Some examples of brands where they really benefit from explaining their product or telling the origin story of it. Brands where a product shown that's more than just a picture will drive a lot more sales from audience because they can understand why they're getting it, kind of get a good feeling for it. So I think it's important to take for a CEO, it's important to A, be ready for the fact that, you know, from a practical perspective, 20% of e-commerce is going to be on live video. And it's not something that there's going to be any room to ignore. It's going to be a part of everybody's commerce practice. But also that sort of next level of connection between an audience and certainly not a group of consumers and a group of products.
So hang on, let me just jump in on one thing there. Please. So let's say you are the CEO, okay? And yes, you know instinctively that you sign up to everything you just said, right? But then you start to look around the room and you see, okay, well, am I going to do this? Am I going to be in front of the camera or do I have to hire a presenter, but isn't that inauthentic? Do I have to find a young person from within the company? Do I find a sales associate or do I audition within the company? I mean, you start to have to start thinking like a casting director, right? And then some brands should be doing it, but then some people are shy and they just don't have the bug or the instinct or the confidence potentially. So is there someone one has to start hiring? Like you talked about founderism, right? Founderism is a term about the founder being also the face of the brand, and they push them out into PR land, and they're on the website, and you have a whole history of the founder, and you know you see this whole story, and you know all the digital native brands. Well, some people don't want to do that, and many legacy companies don't know how to do that. But today, does one have to hire a face of the brand to be the person in front of the camera these days? What's that going to mean for the new faces of brands?
I think it's very different for each brand. I think you're right. Some of the most successful live shopping streams are led by a founder or a co-founder or a leader of the store because they can speak passionately about why they started the brand, what inspires them about the products that they're selling. And that's super effective. But it doesn't have to be the CEO because not every CEO is comfortable going on camera. But you don't necessarily need to go and hire like a famous influencer to make this successful. In fact, we recommend against that. We suggest finding someone within your organization or someone who your organization is familiar with and making them that master of ceremonies. And what they can do is then bring, if the founder isn't comfortable being the kind of central point or the ringmaster of these very active conversational live shopping streams, that person could do it and bring the founder in, ask them questions, guide the thing, bring the influencers who are associated with the brand in, potentially interview them, benefit from their followings coming in, but don't expect not every founder or every influencer to be a good live seller. What you're looking for is someone in your organization who's fast on their feet, is friendly, the same person that you'd have acting as a sales representative in your storefront. Or even, you know, someone you know who's just super friendly and loves to talk. And like I often think that you're better off with someone who's an improv person than an actor mm-hmm. in these situations, because it's all about that dialogue. And I think, you know, one of the things we're excited about as this starts to grow in this market, we talked about the ability for people to be able to sell on behalf of merchants. I think one of the cool things about that is there's going to be a whole slew of people who get really good at this, and they can be accessed to be the host, because none of this makes sense if you're putting, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars into creating content and paying big talent to put on these shows. These shows are all about being in, being put on regularly so people can tune in again yep. and tell their friends if they have fun. Mm-hmm. And if you're dropping, you know, tons of money on the content, it's very difficult to show, the kind of return on investment, that you need to make this a regular practice. Yeah. So it has to become an authentic conversation. It has to become a virtual, brick and mortar store where this conversation is kicking in, where people can, and it really also depends on the type of product. Let's say you have a product that has a ton of explanation required. In those cases, you definitely want someone who really gets it and gets excited about it, knows how to use it, talking about it.
Yeah.
And that's a really great, what we're seeing really good results on is products where it's like, hey, it's a bit hard to buy this off an e-commerce brochure. If I were to be able to ask a question to someone and get an answer right away, I'd buy it right here.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that as a really effective way as well. So I think in summary, for the CEOs out there, you don't have to be the host, but you should be a guest if you're comfortable at all, because you excite the audience because if you're a CEO, you're obviously passionate about your business. But it also could be a designer coming in who's passionate about the clothing line they've made, or even an inventor. Or a customer who's used it and is talking about how delightful it's been for them. I use the example of like, hey, I gave this to my niece last year for Christmas and she loved it. Suddenly that's spreading through the rest of the audience. They can, your customers can turn into your best evangelists as well.
But it does feel though that one needs to have somebody with a programming mindset to be the custodian of this, right? So whether they're in front of the camera or behind it or both, the CEO needs to think of, okay, well, if we are going to be our own influencer, what it really means is that we are a content creator. We are a production company or a capture company, as we talked about earlier. So therefore we need to staff up with that kind of talent. And obviously you're providing a big chunk of it because they don't have to build a studio. They don't have to do all the technology stuff. The lighting is done through the app and whatever else. But you do need the people who are going to say, all right, well, what's the cadence? How are we going to do it? Who's going to do it? Who's going to show up? Who's going to be a guest? Who's going to be pushing this out? So I think it's a different mindset, a different team. It's a whole other, it's almost like if people talk about the QVC hosts, right, that it's like it's a real job and they get paid a fortune. But now that discipline potentially is going to be something that it will be needed at scale and highly in demand. So because we're running out of time, I wanted to touch on one last thing. So how do we get started? How does a brand, the big retailers, I get it, and they'll call you, they'll get an enterprise solution and you'll figure it out. But let's say you're a smaller brand, who should they call? How quickly can they get set up with you? You know, if they call you tomorrow morning, when can they do their first show? How's it going to go for people when they call you tomorrow morning?
Well, for smaller brands, they don't even need to call us. They can go and sign up for Stage 10 at stage10.tv, and then go, if they're a Shopify brand, they can get the Stage 10 app in the Shopify app store. Connect their Stage 10 and Shopify account, and then they're off to the races. And it's not just that pro multi-source studio we talked about. We also have a really easy to use mobile app that just lets them go live as easily as make a video call, start talking to their audience without doing anything too fancy. But I think you're right. There's an education piece, which is really helpful here. So we do encourage even those small brands to call us, because we've been, we've been playing in this space now for, you know, longer than almost anyone else, at least in this part of the world. So we've learned what works and what doesn't. We've learned how to be able to create this content in an efficient way, and we're really happy to share those best practices with brands, both big and small. And I think that's a really important point, especially, you know, going back to what you're talking about just before this, is this is a new style of content marketing and a new style of selling. And what we've done over the last number of years is gather an incredible amount of data and real world experience, which allow us to take these merchants, big or small, by the hand and say, hey, here's some of the best practices. When someone makes a purchase, thank them on screen. Someone asks a question, say, that's a great question. I'll answer you like you're in the same room. Go live at the same time every week so that it promotes discovery. Yeah. I think the other really exciting thing that I should mention is that these live shopping streams don't end after the live. They live on in a shoppable VOD, so you can continue to monetize the content. And the video that is recorded can then be repurposed and cut for different social platforms. One more thing I think it's important to point out is for these you were talking about the self-serve merchants or like smaller merchants who can now start to participate in this live shopping practice. We've recently expanded our partnership with Shopify to power all the live shopping in Shopify's consumer-facing marketplace, the Shop app. So the exciting bit about that is now even a merchant below the level of a Target or a Netflix or our partners who have no trouble gathering an audience, now we not only are able to stream into onto your storefront, your e-commerce page, which we were always able to do, a multi-stream across social, as we're always able to do, or simulcast. But now we can actually Stage 10's real-time content delivery network and interactive player are natively integrated within that Shop app. So when a merchant goes live, a push notification goes out to actually gather an audience for them, which really helps to kickstart. And then once they're going live as a regular practice at the same time, you know, another best practice is call out next week's live stream during this week's live stream, because people are having so much fun in this interactive experience that they want to come back. They want to tell their friends about it. Yeah. And that's why it's so key that this is a regular practice that happens consistently. Yeah. But we're really excited about that potential for those smaller merchants to have a chance to not just use live shopping as a way to connect with existing customers, but to reach new customers and lower their customer acquisition costs. And then if they're doing a good job of going live regularly and talking to their audience, like they're all together in the same room. They're going to become the next live shopping superstars, and they'll become the next big brands.
That's going to be an amazing, amazing few years to watch who does this and which athletes, content creative athletes are going to be the ones that win, because it's a different muscle that needs to be developed within these companies. And I think, it's not going to be for everyone, but those who do it will win and we'll pop up above the parapet. Listen, this is all we have time for, but I just want to say that I take my hat off to everything you're doing. I think that
Thanks, Marty.
You're going to be in high demand. I think there are many people trying to figure this out, and I think it's a great thing that you're kind of being the picks and shovels of the space. And I think there's a lot of need for that. And I think it's lovely that, as you just said, that, the little guy and gal can actually just plug in and get going. And then obviously there'll be more enterprise solutions as people get bigger and have more needs. But I really think that, as I said at the beginning, the future is here, unevenly distributed, but I think you're the distributor of at least this future. So, Dave Lazar, CEO, founder of Stage 10, thank you for doing the safari with me.
Thank you so much. It's been a wonderful tour through the safari, and as always, great talking to you, Morty. Really cool stuff. I'm so excited by the next generation of content formats and wonderful new ways to let merchants and their customers connect and come together.
Thanks, Dave. If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the Safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.